Let them fight. Welcome to Primary Technology, the show about the tech news that matters. This week, Apple officially announced the dates for WWDC, and there's some Easter eggs in some of the tweets from people like Greg Joswiak. We're going to talk about that. Apple officially got sued by the United States Department of Justice. We want to touch on that. We might have to wait till May for new iPads. Amazon has a new app that scans the palm of your hand to unlock your account. Threads is now in the Fediverse. And Jason has a surprise for me, and I have literally no idea what it is. This episode is brought to you by all of you who support the show directly, so thank you for that. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Robles, and joining me, as always, my good friend, Jason Aitzen. How's it going, Jason?
I'm good, Stephen. This is the podcast of the sick people, apparently. So
this is, like, listen, this is dedication, everybody, because I'm still in Los Angeles. I'm in a hotel room, which is my, this is not a virtual background. This is this is my hotel room in Los Angeles. I have a totally different setup, laptop, everything, but we're doing it. It's 6:30 my time. I don't even know what time it is where you are. 8:30?
It's like 9:41.
Okay, yeah, something like that.
It's like a 3-hour and 10-minute time difference.
We both have sick voices, but listen, it's going to be great. I forgot to pull the 5-star ratings and review because I've been at a conference. I totally forgot. So we're going to save those till next week. And then all of you who do leave a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts and a rating, we will give you a shout out next week along with those who did it this past week too. So, but I'm excited because Jason has a surprise. I have no idea what he's about to tell me or show me, but he teased it last night and I'm excited and terrified. So what's about to happen?
I'm going to send you 3 photos here in a second. I also just want to give Steven credit because Steven is committed enough to the bit that I gave him a quote today and he didn't even know what movie it was from. I think it's applicable when you think about all of the things that Apple has been involved with lately. But this is your job, listeners. Leave us a 5-star review and tell us what movie that's from. I think everyone knows except for Steven, but I think that's your challenge. So
I'm not gonna look it up. All right. I'll read the review and see what everybody says. Now you just sent me 3 photos. I am very excited about what you just said.
You've got the photos, right?
I got the photos.
So I sent Steven 3 photos essentially of a cable running through my backyard to my office, and then I sent him a speed test from the basically I now have Ethernet in my office because as listeners will know, I have not had reliable internet out here, and I got so tired of it I literally just strung 100-foot Cat6 cable through my backyard, out a window in my living room, into my office, like through the door. And so now I sent him the download speed, and on Wi-Fi, you have to admit this is pretty good. It's not 2 gigs up and down, but on Wi-Fi, it's 714 up, down, and 824 up. So yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Very good speed. Well, Jason, this is a wonderful surprise. Thank you for this. Are you going to bury this?
We're going to bury it, but it is still only 30 degrees outside. So we're going to wait till it warms up a tiny bit. But I personally just think that I think there's something to be said for the irony that the week that I have Ethernet in my office is the week that Steven was trying to figure out if he could tether to his phone and use continuity camera at the same time because he's in a hotel room. There's just some bittersweet irony there. Yes.
The irony is there. Well, Jason, thank you so much. That is a wonderful gift. I consider it a belated birthday gift to have Ethernet speeds. And then next week, I'll be back on my normal fast speed. We're going to be recording in 8K quality. Going to be sharing all the videos. It's going to be great.
Love that fast. So now I have to get a new camera too, apparently.
No. You added the lights though. The lights in the background look good.
Yeah, and you thought that was going to be the surprise. But see, you already knew about the light.
I did. Right. That's what I thought. I'm actually impressed too. If you're watching this on YouTube, youtube.com/@primarytechshow. I'm using my iPhone in continuity camera mode, and it's doing a really good job because it's actually very dim in my hotel room right now, and I only have this like one lamp like to my right here, and it's doing great. Like, it's not even sunny outside. Like, it's still night. Like, outside is dark, and so the iPhone's doing a great job with continuity camera, just have to say. And this is the first time using my AirPods Max in like a year because it's the only wired headphones I brought. So there you go. Earlier this week, Apple officially announced WWDC, the dates. It's going to start June 10th. It'll be that week, June 10th through 14th. Obviously, the keynote's usually on Monday, June 10th. So that'll be the announcements for all the OS updates. The invite image, I thought was interesting. There's a lot of memes going around of like, it's VVVDC24. I thought that was an interesting design choice.
It's then, Volkswagen is coming to Washington, D.C. this year.
Exactly. Yeah, it makes total sense. So exciting. That was interesting. Yeah. Colors, you know, it's fun. A basic Apple guy had a fun animation where he like made this say AirPower, and he was like, that's the surprise coming to WWDC.
He's committed.
The press release, you know, obviously doesn't tell anything about what they're going to be announcing. Just says they had their Swift Student Challenge and developer is going to have amazing new tools or whatever. There's going to be the in-person, quote-unquote, keynote event where you can go watch in-person a video. You know, they'll be inviting press and stuff. But Greg Joswiak, still posting on Twitter, notably, when he's posting stuff like this. I think it's interesting. He said, mark your calendars, June 10 to 14th. It's going to be absolutely incredible. And of course, he capitalized the A in absolutely and the I in incredible.
Hmm.
And you can, if you want to read the tea leaves, which, you know, you got to do as Apple fans of AI, absolutely incredible. So it seems like he is, I don't know. Do you think, I mean, it's got to be on purpose. Greg Joswiak is not going to do anything not on purpose when he's posting
right
on Twitter.
Yeah, so. I think it's pretty clear that there's,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think the other thing of note with WWDC is it seems that they're pretty committed to this format now. I think they really like
right
the way that they're doing it, because if you read the press release, they're actually saying we're holding this online, right? WWDC right as a conference is now a fully virtual conference. And then they have a special event on the opening day, which is you normally the keynote, and then they do some other things during the day, and then there's like the State of the Union and some kind of a party at night. So they seem to really like that. It does seem to work well, because they, you know, there's fewer people that can attend, but right, I mean, it's Apple Park. It's like, if you want to have home court advantage for whatever it is you're going to do, this seems right like the way to do it. So.
Well, I'm excited. We got the official dates. It had been like the first week in June the last couple of years, but now June 1st is a Saturday, I think. And so, I don't know. I guess they wanted to move it a week. But I'm excited to see Vision OS 2.0. We should see that. Should be a very, very fast-paced event because of all the OS updates they're going to have to cover. Hopefully, I'm hoping we see HomeKit and some smart home things. We didn't really get anything last year, or I don't even know if the year before. There was kind of like offhand mentions of HomeKit, but not like additional categories for smart home devices. Matter was mentioned, but we still haven't had a ton of stuff. We have Matter devices now, but not really like new categories yet. Robot vacuum should be coming soon-ish, but anyway, I'm excited for it. And of course, all the AI features that should be coming with iOS 18 and macOS. So I think we should do a wish list maybe closer to the event. We can do like a wish list predictions. And so that'll be coming, we'll do that like late May or something. But I also want to think about, we don't have to say it right now, but do you think what the macOS name is going to be? We don't have to make our predictions now.
Okay, but I like but I to, need say, to start thinking about it. Okay.
You got to start thinking about it. I've predicted El Dorado for like the last couple of years and have been wrong each time. So I'm going to change mine up. So I got to think
and
about
this
it
will be the year.
This will be the year. So we'll see. My computer also just went into light mode by itself. And so I'm going to change that, because if you were watching, you'll see everything just went wrong.
Your face just turned into a ghost, Steven.
Exactly. Yeah, the lighting. Well, maybe it was better lighting. So anyway, so that's WWDC. That's really all the details we have on it. But nice to know the dates. And I mean, Jason, you don't know if you'll be going, if not until you receive an invite, right? Like they send those press invites later.
Yeah. Normally, I think if I remember correctly, for WWDC in the past, they send the invites. So like for a normal Apple event, it's like 2 weeks out, right? And then for WWDC, it's like 3 weeks-ish. So they do give you a little bit more time, but it's not going to be until probably like mid to late May before they send out media. But I mean, I'll definitely go. Like I was there last year for the Apple Vision Pro. I certainly would want to be there to hear and have, because the advantage is, it's on one hand, it's actually easier to cover the keynote itself from home. It is. Going to Apple Park is very cool, but if what you're trying to do is write several stories about what they're talking about, it's easier to do that from home.
Right.
Because you don't have to go from watching it to try to find somewhere to sit. But the advantage is that you will then often get in-person briefings. So last year I had the Vision Pro briefing and also had a 15-inch MacBook Air briefing, which was great.
Right.
And so I'll definitely go. I've already marked the dates off on my calendar, assuming I get an invitation. So.
And last year, the hardware we got was actually the M2 Ultra in the Mac Pro and Mac Studio. And we got the 15-inch MacBook Air, I believe.
Yep.
That was released at WWDC.
Yep.
And then, of course, Vision Pro. So it was actually a big hardware year last year. Vision Pro being, you know, kind of the new category and announced. So, you know, I think Mac Pro, we'll probably see Mac Pro and Mac Studio again. That seems like the WWDC developer type hardware, you know, the more powerful high-end stuff. So we'll see. I'd be excited. I don't know if I'll be tempted to upgrade my M1 Max Mac Studio, because it's so good. Like, my M1 Max Mac Studio, it never slows down, never gives me any issues. So I really don't need to upgrade it, but an M3 yeah. Ultra. That'd be pretty nice. I don't know.
I don't know what you would do with all that power, but
record this podcast.
Yeah.
At the same speed that we do now.
Yeah. But I do feel like you do need something to now keep up with my bandwidth. That's where at that point now where I am no longer the limiting factor. I realize though, what I should have said about WWDC is that I'm not coming unless Steven can also come so we can record our podcast live. That's what I should have said. So
thank you for your service.
Hook us up, Apple.
All right. Now, speaking of Apple, there's a lot of suits going on. Obviously, as per usual, as soon as we were done recording last week, Jason literally predicted on the show, you were like, within minutes, Apple's going to be officially sued by the DOJ. And it happened.
Yep.
So that was right after. So every other podcast has now covered that. But I just want to mention it briefly because you had a good article about it and we could talk about kind of the highlights of it. But there's other lawsuits going on. Namely, Apple is suing a former employee over leaking information. Now, I find this interesting. I'm going to make a prediction who I think this leaker was talking to. But this was reported by Mac Rumors. Andrew Audie? I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Odd. Apple is suing former employee Andrew Odd, seeking damages in excess of $25,000, where the lawsuit alleges that over a five-year period, Odd used his Apple-issued work iPhone to leak information about more than half a dozen Apple products and policies, including its then unannounced Journal app and Vision Pro headset, which I could see Apple will be pretty mad about the Vision Pro leaking. So I find this interesting. Apparently, he sent over 1,400 messages to the same journalist through Signal, who ought to refer to as Homeboy. Now, there's not that many like reputable leakers anymore. Like if you discount like all the random Twitter leakers and stuff,
right?
And so I don't have no information on this, and it doesn't say who he was communicating with. Obviously, it's through Signal, but Homeboy, I think it might be Prosser. But anyway, I think
Well, it does say that. I mean, it does make the connection that he was using it to communicate with a journalist at the Wall Street Journal on a phone call, and then that same month, a Wall Street Journal reporter who is named in that story published a report on it. So I took it as that's who they're saying he talked to. And I have interesting feelings about this because I don't not think that reporters should report on things that they're given by people from inside companies, but it does get kind of weird when what you're reporting on is non-public information that isn't like malicious. Right? Like, I don't know. I feel weird about, I mean, yeah, as someone who likes Apple and likes products that they make, I always want to know what's coming, but that doesn't, I don't know. It's strange. I'm not saying don't send me stuff. I'm just saying I do sort of feel weird about I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, Apple should have definitely sued this guy. And also, why are you using your work phone? I mean, come on, right? Like, I think the thing we've learned, if nothing else, is like, Why would you use your work device? You don't own it. And yes, the company can 100% do what they want with it to get the information. Like, I don't know. This was a very poorly planned heist.
Yeah, this was not Ocean's 11. Ocean would not have done it this way.
No.
I do find it strange to use a work device. Apparently, when the employee, I guess, thought he was going to be caught or whatever, he tried like deleting a bunch of messages in like the bathroom at Apple Park, I guess, like in the middle of the day,
which is where you go when you're about to get caught, apparently.
Right, exactly. That's what they do in the movies. But yeah. Don't use your work iPhone at Apple, given to you by Apple, to send leaks about Apple. Yep. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Curious, and obviously we don't know who this might be, but Mark Gurman is still probably one of the most well-sourced leakers, and we don't refer to him as a leaker a lot because he writes for Bloomberg. You know,
right.
Well-established journal.
Mark Gurman, yeah.
But he's leaking like stuff, and so he must be receiving this information one way or another, and Apple's taking, you know, measures when they discover these leakers internally. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I these guys got to be concerned about their job, I imagine, if they keep publishing leaks. I mean, Mark Gurman might have multiple sources, I don't know, but it just seems like a risky proposition. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I would agree that from a reporter standpoint, like, and Mark Gurman is generally, and even in this case, the story that they referenced in the Wall Street Journal wasn't some sort of, you know, it was a journaling app, which was the first story that they referenced in here. This is not like top secret futuristic stuff. And I will say that there are times, doesn't seem like this is the case here, and I'm not saying this about specifically Apple, that companies will use those relationships to seed stories that they want to get out, right? I don't think there's been a Google Pixel device that's been announced without being leaked first in the last, I don't know, 5 years.
I think Google's just straight leaking them first.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think they're like, well, no one will pay attention if we just announce it. But if we leak it, they'll cover that. So let's leak it first and then announce it. So
that is true. That's funny. All right, well, speaking of the other lawsuit, it was official last week on Thursday. And let me just say, the one time we record on a Friday, no news breaks on Thursday. This week we record on Friday. Just, you know, is anything gonna happen?
I'm pretty sure iPads are coming at 1 o'clock today, just so that you know.
No. Well, okay. Well, now that you just said it, I'm just going to throw it in right here because I was so upset. Speaking of Mark Gurman at Bloomberg said iPads are not going to be coming till May. We're going to have to wait till May for new iPads.
So. This reminds me, isn't it Motel 6, which is like, we'll leave the light on? I just picture Steven has been sitting on his front porch with the light on waiting for the new iPads to show up for like weeks. And it's like, Steven, you got to go back inside, come back out.
Oh, my word. It's like the meme of the guy like sitting on a park bench, standing, staring off in the distance. That's been me. And now it's just a skeleton because there's no iPads coming anytime soon. That's fine. And I'll just wait. Oh, which I want to talk about in the bonus episode this week briefly. I visited the Apple Tower Theater store here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it was very cool. Have you been to that one?
I have not. I'm a little bit jealous.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. So anyway, we'll talk about that. I'm also going to do a vlog about it. I did videos. Ooh, and I have to say, I'll talk about it in the bonus episode, but the employees were very suspicious as I was walking around filming, talking.
Yeah, because no one's ever done that before in an Apple store. I mean, come on. I mean, Steven's done it before in an Apple store.
I did, yeah. And I was like, I thought Apple Tower Theater, of all Apple stores, like their grand opening, but I guess, you know, these people might not have been there for the opening, but like, iJustine had a video about it to Brian Tom, like, I am not the first, but
Yeah,
I got some funny looks. But anyway.
Can we go back to the DOJ suit for just a second? Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's where I'm going. Yeah.
Okay, great. So I just wanted to throw. So one thing I would suggest, because I don't think it's worth recapping the whole thing because it's been done a bunch of times since here. That was just our bad timing. I'm going to write another piece about it because I have some additional thoughts. But I would just direct people, if they want to hear a very good back and forth on the sort of legal versus practical sides of this. One of Ben Thompson's podcasts is called Sharp Tech. I think you probably have to subscribe to his whole Stratechery bundle to get it. He does it with a guy named Andrew Sharp, and Andrew Sharp is a lawyer, and they kind of go back and forth about the legal parts of it and the takeaway, which has kind of helped me to form where I stand on this, is that like the DOJ picks some really weird things to sue Apple over, right? The thing everyone cares about, the only thing anyone cares about, is the App Store, right? That's the thing people care about. And this lawsuit is not about the App Store at all, right? Anybody who has a beef with Apple right now is upset because, you know, you can't subscribe to Spotify in the app because it's like they don't have a link because Apple would charge them 30% commission. At the same time, Apple has Apple Music, which competes directly with Spotify. Like, those are all the things that are just like people get mad about. The problem is, and you have to imagine the people at the DOJ right now are just so mad at Epic because Epic decided to pick that fight and lost. And so now it's like settled law. Like Apple, you know, Apple will tell you that three courts in the last 3 years have said that Apple's business model is legal. Like they will just tell you that. They will let you know that our business model. Now, the question is, should they continue to hold on to it so tightly? Because, and this is the point Ben Thompson was making, is because of the App Store, because of all the enemies Apple has made, now what the DOJ is actually attacking is their vertical integration, right? Like Apple for years has just talked about how they build software and hardware and services that all go together, right? And their famous three-word like tagline has always been, it just works. And the fact that it just works is the types of things where, you know, you can copy something on your Mac and you can paste it on your iPhone, or you can drag your cursor off of your screen of your Mac and it'll just go onto your iPad, or, you know, iCloud, most of the time just works, or you can pair a new Apple Watch to your phone by like holding the little thing up to, you know, the swirly little whatever happens. And then all of your stuff is just there. It just works. And you've probably had the same experience. You can tell your parents, just go buy an iPhone. It'll just be fine. It'll work. You'll have to call me less often for help. Right. But now that's where the DOJ is going. The Apple Watch was one of the specific things that they called out as, you design the Apple Watch in a way that if people buy an iPhone and buy an Apple Watch, they're less likely to switch because that Apple Watch won't work with Android. And so I don't know if the DOJ is going to win, but if they do, I don't think things are going to be much better for Apple users specifically, because what they're trying to break apart is that integration.
So I'm going to put two articles in the show notes. One is Jason's article, and he has a great part down at the bottom, really the 5 points that the DOJ is bringing against Apple. Cloud gaming services, the NFC chip in the iPhone for digital wallet payments. As you know, right now, if you want to pay for something, you can put your bank debit card or whatever in your Apple wallet, and then you can use Apple Pay for that. But the DOJ is suing because they believe like Wells Fargo or whatever should be able to use like Tap to Pay outside of Apple's wallet app, which there's security ramifications there. You know, Apple's using the secure enclave, generating a random number every time you do Apple Pay. So there's a bunch of stuff, like a bunch of details, I imagine, will come out in the court case eventually. The super apps thing, I think, is kind of silly. I mean, the only app trying to be this in the US is X by Elon Musk, and it is not that at all right now. This is, super apps are typically like WeChat in China, where you use that app for everything, like paying bills, you know, sending money back and forth, communicating, whatever. So we don't really have super apps in the US, so that's a little strange. But the argument is that Apple's restrictions has prevented the innovation of super apps. Although, ironically, I've heard this on several podcasts, anytime a company, say Meta, tried shoveling a bunch of stuff into a single app, people don't like it, and they eventually break it out.
Right.
Which is why you have like Facebook Messenger as a standalone app. You have WhatsApp as a standalone app, Instagram, Facebook, Threads. Like, it also might just be a cultural thing. Like, Americans would probably maybe prefer more standalone, like isolated experiences. But anyway, third-party messaging apps, obviously SMS, which is kind of weird because RCS is going to be coming to iPhone very soon, probably in the next year.
And then the lawsuit thing completely ignores. The lawsuit doesn't mention that. It also ignores the fact that that Apple is now allowing cloud gaming streaming services, and that Apple has opened up the NFC chip in the EU. So like, it ignores all of those things.
Yeah. And again, neither of us are lawyers. Jason reads more law than I do. I did read like the PDF. You can read the court case, you know, it's public.
You sure can.
And I'll put a link to the PDF in the show notes too. But one of the things I find interesting, and this was on the ATP podcast, John Siracusa made this distinction. If you look at what the EU has done with the Digital Markets Act, that was not a court case to try and convict Apple of guilt that they did something wrong. That was passing laws to change how Apple has to function in the EU. This is a court case where the DOJ is trying to prove that Apple broke the law with something they did. This is not necessarily establishing new law to change how Apple functions in the future, which might be part of what the judge or jury, however this court case comes out in the end, it might result in that. But it feels a little backwards. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but it feels a little backwards. Like, maybe the DOJ or the US government should have tried to enact or pass laws to change what it would fund, like the DMA, like the Digital Markets Act in Europe, rather than trying to do a court case to convict Apple of guilt in breaking the law. So I don't know. Again, not a lawyer.
Yeah. Well, let me just, so just for our listeners, in case you don't listen to as many podcasts as Steven and I, as I do, which would be a normal thing. Like it's good for you. Like, I mean that sincerely.
Yeah.
That the DOJ is suing Apple under a law that at this point is 134 years old, the Sherman Antitrust Act, which was started for like railroads and oil companies, right? And the first thing that they have to do is prove that Apple has a monopoly. And they have said that Apple's monopoly is in a category called performance smartphones. I don't know, Steven, if you know what performance smartphones are. It's just a thing they made up. And they made it up. The other thing that they did is they're doing it based on revenue. So Apple, they're saying, has 70% of the revenue in this category they made up. Again, not a lawyer. I feel weird that we have to keep saying that. Just, we're not lawyers. We should just put that on our show, you know, the show thing or whatever. Like
the tagline.
We just need to make it clear. And sorry. So take this for a grain of salt, but this is just common sense. And I looked because I had heard several people say this, but that revenue is not how they define market share. If you have a monopoly, it's not based on how much revenue, the percentage of revenue you have in a given market. It's based on the total like units or how that, you know, however that plays out. So the total number of iPhones. Apple has a larger share of the revenue because it does charge more for, like, you know, Pixel is less expensive than maybe an iPhone. But if it's like $800 versus $600 for the same, like the same number of people bought one, it's just Apple made more money off of it. Doesn't give you more of a monopoly just because people are more willing to pay a larger amount if the same number of people are actually buying them. And so the DOJ as far as I understand, has to first prove that Apple has a monopoly and then that it is leveraging that monopoly power in order to push out competition. Because it's legal for a company to push out competition. Like, that's what companies do, right? If you open a bakery, you don't want someone opening one next door. You would just try to like not have that happen. Right. But if you own all the bakeries, you can't then try to squash the one bakery that's trying to open. So
the performance smartphone category specifically like irks me, because it's like, if you are arguing that only performance smartphones can do these things like cloud gaming or super apps or integrate with a smartwatch, like that's just patently not true. Like, you could buy a refurbished iPhone SE for like $300-something.
Yep.
And you have the exact same operating system as an iPhone 15 Pro Max and arguably could do all the same things. And cloud gaming of all things has no bearing on the performance of the hardware on right. your device, except for maybe internet speed.
Or refresh like rate of your display, maybe. Like, maybe.
But like, to make that distinction is clearly just to peg Apple in like, to paint Apple in a more negative light. There is no like basis in reality when it comes to this performance smartphone category. And I've been following Walt Mossberg, who's a longtime journalist, has covered Apple, like interviewed Steve Jobs many times. He did the All Things D conference with Kara Swisher. And again, Jobs was there multiple times, but he's had multiple threads. I'm going to put this one in the show notes. And he does a really good job of like kind of going back in time and talking about the reason why the iPhone was so innovative and how it actually broke apart some of the monopolistic tendencies, especially of things like wireless carriers, when it launched. And if you remember, the iPhone just launched. It was singular back then, which then came AT&T, but the CEO came out and the announcement was the iPhone will be exclusively on singular. And Steve Jobs and Apple did that because singular was the only carrier that was willing to have the iPhone and not have any say in what was on the phone. Because back then, carriers were extremely granular of like, you know, putting apps or bloatware or whatever. And the smartphone makers just didn't have the same kind of freedom that they do now, largely, ironically, because of that Apple when they launched the iPhone. And so Walt Mossberg, you know, he's retired now. You know, he's not really covering things, but his threads have been great about this, talking also about the 30% cut and how that was revolutionary because, honestly, carriers were taking large cuts back then from developers and things like that. So anyway, I'll just put a couple of his threads in the show notes, but this is also going to be multi-years. Like, this is not going to be resolved anytime soon. This is not going to change anything anytime soon. This could be like 5-10 years. You know, The Verge, we're like doing under or over for 2030, like six years from now. There's going to be a long time before anything comes of this. I think one of the most interesting things will be the emails that come out from like Apple execs, you know, because we've had emails come out in the past where they're like, we don't want to put iMessage on Android because it gives people an easier option out. So, you know, we can see stuff like that.
Yeah. So the lesson here is don't use iMessage on your work phone and don't use email, right? Like, that's what we've learned today on the podcast.
That's it.
Yeah.
They should just, I mean, all those Apple execs, they should just have one big iMessage group chat.
Mm.
Yeah. Just do that. Then it's never going to come out because it's double end-to-end encrypted. They got the crypto, whatever that was, that came out in 17.4, the quantum security.
That's true. So, of course, if the company owns the device and then they get subpoenaed for it, then the company has to hand over the device. So then you have one of the ends. But anyway.
One tangential article I wanted to mention too, the Wall Street Journal did a profile on Phil Schiller. You know, he was an Apple fellow. He was, I think, kind of stepping back from some of his responsibilities at Apple. But now with all of this App Store, the DMA in the Europe, and then now this case in the DOJ, Phil Schiller's coming back with a vengeance and really trying in defending Apple and being out there. Supposedly, he's working like 80 hours a week now because of all this stuff. And so I think it's interesting that they're still leaning on Phil Schiller. I mean, obviously, he has the years of experience. He can speak to things like the original iPhone launch and some of the stuff that they had to deal with then. He's going to be getting a whole, whatever, third wind, which he's been with Apple since like 1987 or something like that. He left in the 90s for a little while and then came back with Steve Jobs and then was at Apple for like 30 something years after that. So he's been with Apple for a long time. And it seems like he's about to have like a third section of his career with Apple now in the courts. That's going to be the last stage of his career with Apple.
Yeah, we really appreciate how much work you did to launch all of these killer products that everyone loves. Now we would like you to come back and just do this. But
defend Apple.
Yeah, there was this quote in that article that you have on the screen there, we talked about how Cook often just allows the people who work for him to just handle their area of responsibility, and how he just defers to Schiller on a lot of the App Store matters. And I thought that it's interesting, you know, this is one of those people familiar with the matter kind of quote. So somebody wanted to make it very clear that if you're mad about the App Store, you're mad at Phil Schiller, you're not mad at Tim Cook. Like somebody wanted, like that was That's placed the there for very important. And, you know, we had that email that Tim or that Phil Schiller sent to Tim Sweeney over the Epic rejection of their developer certificate. And it's pretty clear that like, nope, that was Schiller's email, right? That was not Tim Cook said, email this guy, we don't want him in here. That was like Schiller woke up in the morning, saw the list of new developer certificates, is like, we're not doing this again. These people, they're not coming into our app store. And it's, I mean, for better or worse, whatever you think of Phil Schiller, who was a genius of product marketing, like the current state of the app store is his. Now, I don't think that that absolves Tim Cook, because Tim Cook is the one who sets the direction. And if Phil Schiller is making poor decisions about developer relations and how he is choosing to be less than gracious with developers, I do still think that that comes back to Tim Cook, which was the point of the article I wrote. Like, right. Tim Cook is missing the most important thing, which is you could have avoided all of this if you'd just been a little bit more reasonable with people. Like, think about this. I mean this sincerely. What if Apple had just said a year ago, fine, games 30%, everybody else 10%. That's it. 10%, just 10%. They would have lost $0 probably. That article you referenced mentioned that when they cut the developer fee for the small business program to 15%, they lost like 0% revenue. Like it didn't change, right? It was insignificant. But if they would have just done that, they would have had a very little change, and nobody's going to argue that skins in, you know, some video game, it's fungible. Like there's no cost involved there. So I think that they could have just avoided so much if they'd have just been like, you know what, forget it. We don't need 30% or 15% even from Spotify and Netflix. And I don't know, maybe Netflix would have come back for 10%. Like there is a value to having access to, maybe not Netflix, because they don't really need the App Store. They have 250 million subscribers, right. But there's a whole lot of it. Like, I bet you that Kindle would probably let you buy books. Like, I don't know. I just feel like there's a dollar amount, or percentage, excuse me, that they could have solved a lot of this.
For sure. Well, as it develops and more news comes out, we'll be covering it here on the show. And speaking of Kindle and Amazon, I don't know if you saw this.
There you go. See, I just set you up for that.
That was a good transition. Apparently, Amazon One is launching an app where you can sign up for its palm recognition service. You know, if you would have posted this on April 1st, I would have thought it would have been an April Fool's like article. It just seems, it's kind of bizarre. I think this is for, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Amazon has a few like physical locations,
yep,
where you can like go and shop, and it basically intelligently sees the products that you're taking, and then will charge it to your Amazon account basically upon leaving. It's not, yes, like the normal checkout experience, right?
Yeah. So basically these are stores, Amazon Go is, I think, right, what they're called. And you can walk in and you can scan a QR code on the app, and basically it just watches you with cameras, and whatever you take off the shelf and leave with, you just get charged. But not only can you scan the QR code, you can just scan your palm, which is the creepiest thing I could possibly imagine. I don't want my palm print at Amazon. Now, I'm not suggesting Amazon is like, what good is my palm print if it gets leaked? It's not like your social security number, but I still
will be leaked.
I mean, what would you do with it except for buy stuff at an Amazon Go store? And there's like five of them, and you have to come on. If you need the groceries that bad, I'll be happy to just cut the check for you. It's fine.
I guess I'm just wondering like why we needed another weird biometric authentication when we already have like Touch ID, Face ID. You know, you can do funny things like Windows PCs will have facial recognition that's not like Face ID, where the whole like scanning the dots on your face and reading depth, but just kind of more like camera driven. So I don't know why we need some kind of like astrological palm reading for like unlocking our Amazon One account, but
I agree,
that's strange. So that was the Amazon thing. And then this happened last week after we recorded too, but Threads is now in the Fediverse. And so if you're on Threads here in the US, this is a beta feature, but you can go to Threads is like newsroom articles, like pretty bad. They basically just like keep adding text to this announcement of Threads' launch back in last July.
Yeah.
It's like there's no straight link to the announcement about the Fediverse. I don't know. Like, yeah, this is not a great way to do it.
They just must want the same permalink. It's got to be the reason. I don't know.
I guess it's strange. Anyway, so this was March 21st, ActivityPub, which is the open source Fediverse integration. You can now, if you're here in the US, turn on the beta Fediverse posting on Threads. So I did it immediately when it was launched. And basically what it means is that your Threads account and posts to Threads will be available to users anywhere in the Fediverse, namely services like Mastodon. So let's say you're on Mastodon, you have a Mastodon.social account, or maybe even set up your own server for Mastodon. Now you can follow Threads accounts that have federated. I don't know if I couldn't think of the word federated. So you can follow like my Threads account. So at Stephen Robles at threads.net, you can follow in Mastodon. You can search in Ivory, the Mastodon client, and find my Threads profile there. And whenever I post to Threads now, including replies, like I at mentioned somebody and that showed up too, those posts will be sent to the Fediverse and you can read them wherever you want in like your Mastodon client or other federated social networks in the future. This is a one-way thing to keep in mind. Replies may eventually be able to go backwards, meaning if some like if you reply to one of my federated posts in Mastodon, I eventually one day, not today, should see that reply like in my Threads app when I go to my notifications, and we should be able to communicate that way. But right now it's really just one way, and this does not mean you'll be able to sign into your Threads or Meta account in an app like Ivory and scroll your followers in Threads. Like, that is not what Threads is trying to do. There is a bit of a like lock-in, like Threads wants you to use the Threads app if you want to see posts from people on Threads. And so this is really just to, you know, for someone like me, I have like 1,000-something followers on Mastodon, but almost 7,000 on Threads. And so like for me, and I asked because I was curious what people are going to do I just, you know, post on Threads, it gets sent to Mastodon, they would have to follow a new account. But I think you can also merge accounts in Mastodon sometimes in a certain way. I don't know if it'll work with this, but anyway, it's going to be a little confusing for a while. But bottom line, this is like the first time that a social, I'll say platform, but it's more of a social like backend, allows someone to see posts from a person on their platform of choice, wherever the original poster did it. So you could see my thread post in your Mastodon app because of the Fediverse. And maybe this is the future of social media? Are you bullish on this?
It's not the future of social media. I'm going to say that right now.
Well, there it is.
Here's the thing. Most of the people listening stopped listening a minute or two ago. And it's not your fault. No. It's just that this is so cool and nobody cares, right? The thing I found like
the
over and over.
Care?
No.
Everyone who commented
yes,
nerds
but
on
there's,
our-
there's like not that many of them that care that much about this. And here's what I mean. So I kept seeing the other day and I tried to like find one of the posts on Threads where people were talking about like, oh, so I went over to see how many of the people, you know, on Threads have turned on Federation and like only like 20 of the people who follow me on Mastodon. It's like, right. Because Threads is like one step more nerd than Instagram. And Instagram is as normie as it gets. Come on. Like it is the text version of Instagram and nobody using Instagram. No one, like less than 0.1% of the people using it. Cause there's like 1 billion of them, right? 2 billion of them, right. Care about any of this stuff. I think it's very cool that they're doing it. I don't think it's going to matter for a very long time other than as like an academic thing, because it's going to like all think about what you were just saying. It's going to be confusing for a while because you're not gonna be able to get replies for now, but you can get replies. But if you do this, then you can merge your accounts maybe because in some places Mastodon lets you do. And a lot of people are like, wait, what is even Mastodon? Like that's, I have a Mastodon. When's the last time I used it? I don't remember.
I don't know. I don't even know. I've never seen you post on it, I don't think.
I used it for the first 3 days when it became a thing, when everyone was leaving Twitter. And then I was like, well, no one I know is here. So like, goodbye.
Well, let us know if you care by leaving us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. And you could say, I love the Fediverse.
You can email the other guy. It's totally fine.
I do think it's interesting. I listened to Nilay Patel's Decoder episode where he interviewed the Blue Sky CEO. You know, and they're trying to do... It's a different protocol, so it's not interoperable with ActivityPub. Ironically, like someone tried to build a bridge between ActivityPub and whatever Blue Sky uses, and ActivityPub people got like mad about it because they were like, which is really
no, we
funny.
Want it everywhere, but we want it our way, right? We want exactly. We're the most open walled garden that there is.
So it's so strange. So I don't know. Anyway, leave us a 5-star rating review. You could just say I love the Fediverse. And that'll let Jason know that he's
But only do it if you actually really mean it and you actually like I'm not opposed to it. I don't think like I think it's great. I think it's good that Meta is participating in this way. 100%. Like I turned it on. I turned on the Federation. I just don't think most people care. Even people who listen to tech podcasts, the people who do tech podcasts care. But the people who listen to them for the most part are like, crap, do I have to figure out another thing? The answer is no, you don't have to figure out another thing. If you are happy with Threads, just be happy. It's good. It'll be fine.
So you can leave a 5-star rating review. You can say, I love the Fediverse, or I don't care about the Fediverse. You can do either way. That'll be the vote, like battery percentage on or off. We'll see what everybody says.
All right.
I want to talk about some weird Apple privacy settings, and then we have some other articles out, and we do want to get, I want to get to the Disney logo redesign, Disney Plus redesign, but I just want to take a moment and thank all of our supporters who support us directly through Apple Podcasts and through Memberful. They get a bonus episode every week. This week, they're going to get a bonus episode about my visit to the Apple Tower Theater store. And so if you want to listen to that episode, you can also access the entire back catalog of bonus episodes immediately when you support the show. You can do a free trial if you would like, just to listen to a couple episodes, see if it's something you'd like to sign up for. So you can go to Apple Podcasts directly and subscribe there, $5 a month or $50 a year, supporting the show that way. Or go to primarytech.fm and you can support the show through Memberful and you can listen in any podcast app you would like. Same price, $5 a month or $50 a year. And your direct support really means a lot for the show. And if you can't do that, we just love that you listen. You can go subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@primarytechshow. And of course, leave us that 5-star rating and review. I know some of you leave like multiple 5-star ratings and reviews because you like keep on participating in the thing, in the like questions that we're asking. So I do want to figure out, you know, I don't know if there's some kind of other community type method. I don't want to do Discord. I don't like Discord. But some other, I don't know. We got to think about a way we can interact.
As long as it's federated, that's fine.
We will only interact in the Fediverse, even though replies don't go backwards.
That's not the same thing I just said. But I actually do like that there are people who keep updating their review. It's kind of like the Meta post that you just shared. It's like my review just keeps getting updated because I want to participate. I love it.
Adds text to the top. And that's fine. Keep doing it. We'll keep giving you shout outs. That's cool. So we thank you to those who support the show who don't hear this because they get an ad-free version and this section gets cut out. But thank you who will support the show this week and access those bonus episodes. We appreciate you.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to mention this because Joanna Stern had an article about it. Gruber shared it. And I actually did a video on it, which I shamelessly tweeted at Gruber or posted on Threads at Gruber's. See if he links it. But there's a setting. This was prompted by the Apple Journal app. So in iOS 17, there's a setting that people are slowly discovering, which is the discoverable by others setting in your iPhone settings now with iOS 17. And this is a discoverable by others. It looks like this over here. It is specifically for the Apple Journal app suggestions, meaning let's say you went with friends to the Apple Store Tower Theater and you all took some pictures. Well, if they're in your contacts and the Journal app sees that you're in the same location, you're taking pictures of the same location, the Journal app will offer suggestions, and it offers suggestions in all kinds of ways, music, podcasts you listened to, places you went. And the discoverable by others means your contacts, and that's the specific point, is it's really just your contacts discoverable by others. They can see the photos that you took, or they could see like, oh, it looks like you went to Apple Tower Theater with so-and-so. Do you want to journal about it? And that's what that discoverable by others toggle is about. You can toggle that off. I leave it on because I do use the Apple Journal app and I like seeing suggestions like that. But I want to mention, I have a whole video about some of the weird privacy settings that you find in just buried deep in the iPhone. Things like significant locations, which you have no control to see what those significant locations are. You could see information about the nearby interactions. And I'll talk about like lockdown mode, stuff like that. But there's also Apple's advertising settings, which I find really interesting. Like I didn't know this data was in your iPhone where you could access. And Apple tracks some things to basically serve you ads in things like the App Store or maybe in things like Apple News. And it actually like puts you in buckets. So it'll say like, it looks like you like these kinds of movies or you listen to this kind or you read these kinds of books. And you can actually see in the settings app on your iPhone what buckets Apple has placed you in. And so you can see right here, if you go to the settings for these kind of advertising on your iPhone, I've been placed in the movie buckets of action and adventure, drama, kids and family, sci-fi and fantasy, which to be honest, yes, those are the buckets that I should be placed in if you're going to serve me ads. And I think it's interesting. You could see this data. You can also turn this off on your iPhone if you don't want Apple to do any kind of tracking or putting you in any buckets for ads. But these settings are there. And so if you want to learn about that, I'm going to put a link to this video. I did the headline more for clicks, but creepy iPhone privacy settings and what they mean. And I actually link every Apple support article that talks about each of these privacy settings in the video description if you want to read what Apple says about them specifically. So, privacy.
I didn't know that. I didn't. I saw the article. I apparently just don't care that much. If you want to know where I'm at, I'm right here.
Well, you got an Ethernet just across the lawn.
It's very obvious where I am right now. I have a trail leading to the house.
You're not hiding anything. I like one of those pictures that you send me. I'll make it the chapter art, but your dog is like posed very stately in the background. Yes.
I couldn't get her to move, and I just said, forget it. You can be in the picture. It's totally fine.
That's funny. All right. Real quick, let me do some quick topics, and then we'll get to the personal tech of how we feel about the Disney Plus logo. So, Six Colors, MLB had their opening day, which Apple has, you know, the MLB Friday Night Baseball thing. And so, Jason Snell, he's like the Apple tech pundit who's all about baseball. Do you like baseball? I know you like college
football.
Yeah,
we like baseball. Yeah. Baseball. I don't watch nearly as many baseball games because there's a lot of them every year, but we like it. Yeah.
Well, there was a big Apple Vision Pro push because you were supposedly there's a better viewing experience for watching these MLB games in Apple Vision Pro. And Jason Snell had a write-up about it. Basically, it wasn't great. It did not go well. Like, it just wasn't a good experience. It was kind of buggy. And also, just yesterday, March 28th, Apple supposedly released a new immersive video showing the MLS, the soccer, I think championship or something from last year. It's like a 5-minute video, and it's the first new immersive video content for Apple Vision Pro since launch, like 3 months ago, which I think is saying something. You know, it's just not a lot of immersive content being released. This was also an event filmed months ago, so maybe it takes a long time to put this together. But yeah, not great.
No,
yeah.
And they kind of pumped this up, right? Like, they basically bought MLS, like the whole soccer. They just bought the whole thing, and the whole video is five minutes long. Like, I feel like if you buy the whole thing, you probably could have come up with some more footage than just five minutes. And
the immersive content is cool. Like, I've watched several. You know, I watched them all because there's only like four things you could watch right now.
Because they're only 5 minutes long. It doesn't take you very long.
They're all 5 minutes long.
You do it at lunchtime. Thing,
it's awesome. You know, the dinosaur things, really cool. The rhinos, you feel like they're coming up on you.
Yeah.
But there's just not a lot of content. Not a lot of content.
You can only have so many rhinos.
So many rhinos. I want to mention this. Canva, which is the kind of the web app for making graphics, a lot of social media posts. They also have AI tools. They've acquired Affinity, which is a suite of apps. I don't know if it was cross-platform or was it just like iPad and iPhone previously?
I think they were available on, well, they're definitely available on the Mac, and I think they're also on Windows. I'm almost positive.
Okay.
So.
But the Affinity suite, they had like photo editing. I think there was like document style editing, like InDesign style stuff, like from the Adobe suite. And so Canva has acquired Affinity. And, you know, there's a reaction online about this, namely like, well, Canva is going to make all this a subscription thing. And one of the nice things about the Affinity suite is it was one of the few still one-time purchase creative software suites where you could just buy it outright and then use it forever. And so there was a bunch of people like buying the current Affinity license with the hopes that they could just use it forever and not pay a subscription later. So that would be nice. But I do think it's a little, I don't know if sad is the right word, but consolidation of tools like this, I feel like is sometimes not the best. Like I like having some independent tools for things. And the one in my mind, of course, is Pixelmator. Like, I would be sad if Pixelmator ever got acquired like Affinity did here. Like, I love Pixelmator. I use it on my Mac. That's what I use to make all the thumbnails and artwork for this show, for my YouTube channel. I use it on my phone. And it's a great standalone app. And it's a great alternative rather than paying Adobe a subscription or some other service. And so I hope there are still those standalone options long-term. And again, there's no worried about Pixelmator would be acquired or anything like that. But I think this is just kind of indicative of Canva acquiring apps like this where, you know, but also Adobe almost acquired Figma last year. And I listened to that Decoder episode too, and that did not go through. And so, you know, maybe not all these services will be acquired. They can stand alone, but I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this?
So one, Affinity has said that they will honor the licenses long-term. They're not going to only go to subscription. And so that's good. And Canva has said the same thing. This is actually like the opposite of the Figma situation, right? Where Adobe was going to buy Figma. It's like now Canva is going to buy Affinity. And Canva is like a $25 billion-ish company. Like they just have to have growth. Like then this is a way for them to acquire more users and to sort of fill in some holes. And so I mean, I'm not like really up in arms about it. I do think that Affinity, it's big. It's a great tool. And the best thing about it is you can pay for it once. I think it's on sale right now. Like, I don't know what the percentage off is, but it's like $114 and you get access to all of them. Like, listen, I'd do it.
It's a great tool. And I will say, like, Canva is a great tool too. They've added some like AI generative tools and they're actually pretty useful. So
yeah,
you should check it out. All right. So here in our last personal tech before we get to the bonus episode, let's talk more about streaming services. And you put this article in our notes, but 9to5Mac was saying that Apple TV Plus is the streaming platform with the highest rated content on IMDb, which honestly, I totally get. I've watched more and more Apple TV Plus content. Masters of the Air. Have you seen Masters of the Air yet?
No, but we just finished watching Shrinking, which is one of those shows that we loved, but that I feel weird about telling everyone that we love because I feel like I think it's a show people should watch, but I'm not sure I can recommend it to everyone that I know, but it's a great show. It's hilarious, especially, I just love that Harrison Ford is in a television show. That's just, it just makes me happy.
He's good in it.
He's very, very
good. He's really good. So this makes total sense. And I'll say as I try to find content to download, like as I was on this trip, I really struggled just to find what stuff to watch. I was like, across all the streaming services, I think Apple TV Plus has the most that I would want to actually watch a series on or something like that. And I think even more notably, doesn't make me want to open the app, is the new Disney Plus color scheme. The most controversial streaming news of the year, which this is from Fast Company, but you could see this image everywhere. If you updated your Disney Plus app, it's gone from the, I think, very Disney blue to this teal gradient, which I don't like. I don't like it.
Yeah, I understand that. And a lot of people are ragging on this online. And I look at it from a marketing and branding perspective, and I think companies like to change their logos because I don't know if somebody gets bored in the C-suite and is like, well, I know what we should do. Let's just make a new logo. But in this case, I actually think that there is a legitimate reason. Now, I'm not saying that the new logo is better. Please, I just want to be clear about that. But the impetus for this is the fact that now Hulu is inside of the Disney Plus app, right? They've talked about doing this for a while, and it actually is in there. So now the Disney Plus app is actually like different right now. They didn't rename it. They didn't go all Max, HBO Max to Max on us like that. It's not just called Plus. Like, that's good. I'm glad that they didn't change the name, but I do think that like it is justified to make a change to a logo when something substantial about the business that a consumer is, you know, buying has changed. And in this case, like there is an actual change. This version of Disney Plus is different than the old version of Disney Plus because you now get Hulu inside. I will tell you, I'll be really interested to see how Disney Plus handles they've said that you'll be able to block non-kid-friendly content from Hulu from showing up in kid profiles in Disney Plus, which is a big deal because like Hulu has like FX shows and all that kind of stuff that you may not want your young children watching. And for a while, I wrote about this years ago, even if you had a kid-safe profile and you had an ad-free version of Hulu, Hulu didn't have the ability to turn off all of the ads. So sometimes you'd be watching like a show, a movie that was on like FX, and they would be showing you ads for like, I don't remember what the name of that show was. It was like about a drug family or something like Animal Planet or something. Like, it's things you didn't want your kids to see. Like, American Horror Show or whatever that, like, those ads would just pop up. So I'll be real interested to see if they're able to really remove that kind of stuff from that content, because that's not what you want from a kid platform like Disney Plus.
So I'm curious. I'm actually logging into the Disney Plus app on my iPad over here. I don't see like a Hulu category just yet. Is there a plan on Disney Plus that you have to upgrade to get Hulu?
So it should be, I think actually, yes. I think it's like if you subscribe to Disney Plus, it's something like $2 more for the Hulu content. However, my understanding was that it was supposed to just, like you should still see the tab, although I have not tried to do it in the iPhone app. We opened it on our television and there's definitely a Hulu tab right on there. I was going to look on the phone. Oh yeah. So if you open the Disney Plus app, you should see the, like, you know, you see Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, Hulu right there. So
I don't know why I don't see that on my iPad.
Maybe it isn't if you don't subscribe, or maybe you haven't updated on your iPhone. I mean, your iPad.
No,
I don't know.
I have the terrible teal logo on my iPad. So
Upgraded. Yeah. Well, you just, do you subscribe to Hulu?
I thought I did, so I'll have to check it later. Because I wanted to see that Shogun show. People were talking about Shogun.
You might want to check and make sure you paid your bill, bud. Sorry, I think that's
no. Why can't I screw Disney stuff? Anyway, we'll see about that. Anyway, I know I'm not really up in arms about it, but I did think their blue logo previously felt more Disney-like. I guess that's my only...
I will agree with you on that. It did feel more like the castle logo, you know.
Yeah, the castle logo, exactly. Yeah,
so I agree.
But anyway, all right. Well, I want to get to talking about the Apple Tower Theater. That should be fun. So let us know. Would you like to hear in our bonus episodes or how you feel about the Disney Plus app? So you could talk about how you feel about the Fediverse and how you feel about the Disney Plus app design change in your 5-star review in our podcast. What were you gonna say?
Well, what was the thing we said at the top? I gave people very specific instructions for their 5-star review. Go back to the beginning and listen.
Go back to the yeah. Okay, they'll remember.
I don't remember what I said.
They'll remember. We'll see the reviews come in and we'll be reminded of what it was all about.
Yeah.
Don't forget, you can subscribe to the show at youtube.com/primarytechshow. You can watch us there. We also have some short clips from there that'll come during the week. And you can support to get the bonus episodes and an ad-free version directly in Apple Podcast or at primarytech.fm. I'll be back to my normal studio and fast bandwidth next week. Although the hotel Wi-Fi, I got to give it credit. It did pretty good.
Yeah, you only froze like twice, so it's good.
Oh, okay. I did.
But the people watching this will never know because you didn't freeze because of the magic of Riverside.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. And that's exactly, I was here speaking on behalf of Riverside. So there you go.
There you go.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And yes, we'll catch you next time.